What is Love Radio Show is sponsored by Fantasy App. Fantasy is a safe space to communicate about your fantasies and passions without fear of judgment. It is a dating app for open-minded couples and singles to experiment with your desires that don't have to be secret anymore.
Hello. This is What is Love Show. What is Love is on air so that love can be in the air. Hello. This is Sasha Sugar. Thank you so much for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. I know it's nasty outside, but if you disregard the weather, life will become beautiful. Or if you stay tuned in on Radio Free Brooklyn, I promise you'll get a boost of love from me and my guest today, which I will introduce in a second. Thank you so much again for being our loyal audience and stay tuned in. So a quick snapshot of what's going to happen today on What is Love. A few weeks ago, my friend reached out to me and she said, Sasha, I think you must come here with me. I'm like, must come? Yeah, sure. What's that? What's that? So she mentioned Touchpoint. I had no idea what Touchpoint was at that time. She just said, well, people come and talk about love and sex. And my initial reaction was, well, why do we need to talk about sex? Why don't just do sex? But then I kind of forgot that I also have a radio show where I talk about love and sex. And it all made sense to me. Well, not really, but I'll get into that. So I did go with my friend to Touchpoint and... Yep, that's exactly what it is. People get together and they talk about love and sex. And today in my studio, I have a creator of Touchpoint, Jared Matthew Weiss. And I'm really, really, really excited to get to know Jared personally and also find out more about what he tries to do with Touchpoint, what is behind Touchpoint, what the mission, ideas, and just have a good time. So... guys, stay tuned in on Radio Free Brooklyn with What is Love Show to find out more about where people can go and openly talk about love and sex. Well, hello, Jared.
Hi.
Oh, you actually sound amazing on the mic. So that's awesome.
Perfect.
Thank you so much for being here with me on Radio Free Brooklyn. I know you had to travel from Upper East Side all the way to Bushwick, but you made it.
I did. I made it. I'm so grateful for being here. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. Thank you for being here. So, Jared, what is Touchpoint? I mean, one sec. A little technical. So, if you were to describe Touchpoint in, you know, two sentences, how would you describe it?
Sure. Touchpoint is a town hall where people share real stories from their love and sex lives.
Okay. Why did you feel the need to create a space for people to talk about love and sex? I mean, love is something, love is omnipresent. Love is something that we all require and need, and it's the basis for our lives. So why do we have to have a special occasion, a special time and space to talk about love?
So I've had a lot of love in my life. I've experienced a lot of love.
How lucky you are.
I am. I'm very grateful. And, you know, that love started at home with my family and has extended into friends and into romantic partners. And, you know, I've felt very blessed with a lot of the love that I've been able to experience. But also, you know, there's a lot of pain in pursuit of love. And it's not really an easy thing for us to talk about. And specifically sex. Sex is something that, you know, clinical studies have proven that when people talk openly about sex and sexuality, that they have better sex, that they have safer sex, that they feel better about themselves, they have a higher self-esteem, that they feel more connected to their partners, and they're open to exploring more things beyond their, you know, comfort zone sexually and romantically. Conversely, when we don't talk about sex, we feel less comfortable in our own skin. We don't have the same emotional connection with our partners. We're less inclined to try anything new. Sex isn't really as good. And often it's actually not even as safe. And so, you know, talking about sex is also a thing that, you know, when we talk about why we don't do it enough, why we do the things, but we don't talk about the things, right? Well, it's because sex is generally something that you actually don't have to talk about to do, right? Sex is generally something that is initiated non-verbally and carried out non-verbally. And so, you know, we're living in a day and age where consent is actually a really big conversation. What is consent? What is yes? What is no? And how do I articulate what I want and what I don't want, you know, in bed, in love, and in life? And so, you know, Touchpoint serves as a vehicle to give people a place to share, but also a place to, like, get the tools they need to take what has traditionally been a nonverbal experience and turn it into a verbal experience where we can really articulate who we are and what we want, and we can cultivate the kind of love or the kind of intimacy, the kind of relationships, and the kind of self that we really aspire to.
Is it something that you came to from your personal experience? You've noticed that once you start talking about the experiences became better. Or is it something that you draw from your conversations with multiple people? I know you have pretty substantial social network, and you've probably had a lot of discussions about love and sex among your friends. So I just kind of wanted to get a bit of the understanding.
Sure.
How did you came to those realizations that you just mentioned?
Yeah, so I mean, virtually everything I just shared is I've learned through the experience of Touchpoint and the thousands of people that have been there. So I didn't start Touchpoint knowing any of that. I started Touchpoint knowing that, you know, love is pretty lonely. And the irony of loneliness is that love is actually loneliest for people that are actually in partnerships. And why that is, it seems so counterintuitive, right? But the reason why that is because when you're in a partnership, you, or should I say I encourage everybody to speak from the I, so I don't want to speak from the you, but I know that, like, when I'm in partnership, I tend to want to preserve the sanctity and the privacy of my partnership and of my partner's life. And so if we're having any issues, it's not really a thing that I feel safe enough to go out into the world and talk to any friends about. It's something, this is our issue, right? And that's kind of how romantic partnership has been constructed socially. It's like, it's us against the world, right? Right. And so that can be a really lonely place when you're facing things that could be romantic, that could be communicative issues, that could be sexual issues, that could be real self-esteem and personal issues, and you don't feel safe to speak about it openly with other people. And I think that, so for me, I have been in a lot of long-term partnerships, and I think that creating a space where I could really hear from other people and what they were experiencing and, you know, what they were going through and what their perspectives were, was really life-changing. Now, I can tell you the moment where I had a really big shift. So the moment where I had a really big shift was at the first touch point. The first touch point was put together in a matter of days. We invited 12 friends into another friend's living room. We sat there. I said, this is, we're going to talk about, you know, what everyone wants to talk about. And the format for that touch point and for the next 2 years worth of touch points was that everybody submitted questions anonymously ahead of time. And then the morning of the event, I shared the questions with everybody who was going, and they upvoted the questions, okay, that resonated with them.
What were some of the questions?
So the most upvoted question of the night, of the very first touch point, was, how do I introduce BDSM into my sex life? So now I can tell you, admittedly, I had no experience with BDSM. I constantly refer to myself as a muggle within the touch point community. I find myself to be much more of a student than a teacher, and I'm really here to learn and absorb, and the people who come to Touchpoint are constantly my greatest teachers and are sharing the books and the podcasts and the experiences and the lessons and the perspectives that really, you know, are so inspiring and so enlightening to me. And so we're sitting there, and my first question was, what is BDSM? And so we start talking about it, and I had, you know, again, very little experience with any of these things. And, you know, then it was going, and a woman says, I have a story to tell. I said, great, okay, what's your story? And she says, well, I'm, you know, in a long-term partnership now with my boyfriend, but we both are divorced. You know, when we were in sexless marriages before, just not like loveless, sexless marriages, it wasn't working. And now we've been together for like a year. And not too long ago, you know, I'd read a book about erotic play, and I'd never explored anything like this. And I shared it with him, and he said he had never explored anything with it. And so next thing you know, one night we had a couple glasses of wine. We went down to this like sex store, and we bought like, we bought like some restraints. They bought like some handcuffs and whatever. She says, and we went back up to his apartment. She says, 1 hour later, I was handcuffed to his kitchen table having the best sex of my life. And now I'm sitting there, I'm like a beet red, because I have not been in a room where people share these things before, right? And I'm like,
I think I'm blushing.
Right. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, wow, okay. And so I look at her and I say, well, why was it the best sex of your life? And she says, because I had realized in that moment, I had never felt safer with a partner in my life. And I was, wow. She said, I had never felt safer. And I realized at that moment, I had never trusted a man or a partner as much as I trusted him, because I was so vulnerable, but I was so open and I was so safe. And all of a sudden, this thing clicked for me, which was that when we were talking about BDSM or something like super erotic that is seemingly inaccessible to the mainstream, right? You have like, you know, some media brands like, you know, 50 Shades of Grey that have made these concepts a little more accessible, but they're still pretty taboo. And what I realized is that when she was talking about this thing, restraints and handcuffs and all this erotic stuff that I'd never heard of before, what she was really talking about was a sense of safety and a sense of trust and feeling like she could trust her partner. And so when I stepped back, I was like, wow, you know, we can really use sex as a prism to look at our sense of self, our sense of creativity, our relationship we have to our partners, the relationship we have to the world, our self-esteem, our childhood, our relationships to our parents, our sense of fantasy. There's so many things that emerge when you use sex as a prism to look at all the things. And so I think that was really the big moment for me, where I was like, okay, we're gonna start doing this every month.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that was quite a twist of the story. Just to go back a bit, why sex, helping us to look at our relationship with as children to our parents. Could you elaborate on that?
Sure.
I'm a bit confused at the moment.
Totally, totally. Well, you know, I mean, I think that like Sigmund Freud would probably be more better suited to speak on this than I. But I can tell you
what
I can do is I can really, you know, as a witness, just share anecdotes that I've heard, right? You know, people have shared stories to say, you know, it's called touch point for a reason. It's called touch point because touch is a universal need, right? And it doesn't matter who you voted for in the last election or what you refer to as God. Touch is just a universal need. And it's not even just a physical need. It's a real emotional need. You might say to yourself, you know, I saw a movie and it was really touching. Or you might say to a friend, keep in touch. Or you might say to somebody you've missed, like, we've been out of touch. And I'm sorry, I haven't been in touch. And the concept of touch is just, you know, it's just a profound element of the human experience. And one day we were talking about God knows what at touch point, and there was a woman who shared a story about growing up in a house where affection was just not, physical affection was not a thing. That nobody hugged. Family members come in for a holiday, for dinner, anything. There's no hugs. Nobody touches.
A profound thing. You know, for human development.
Yeah.
It's really, because I'm going through the same thing. I feel like in my family, we also went very affectionate, aggressively, and how this now affects me being, you know, my not child age anymore. I can relate to that a lot. Anyways, what did you say?
Well, so I think that that's, well, so then, though, then you understand, then you empathize. So your question around how do we use sex as a prism to understand our childhood or our parents or what we were raised with, it's like, you know, for her, hugging is a new thing, you know? So like being touched and being shown physical affection, you know, when you talk about sexuality, you know, that's something that the conversation of it brought her back to her childhood, you know? I mean, when we talk about masturbation, you know, that's come up dozens of times over the last couple of years, and people have memories of being shamed by their parents or by, you know, relatives or by older siblings or by, you know what I mean? And like it brings back, and there's a tethering to that experience or that need and these memories and these emotions. And it runs deep. It's a real serious thing.
You just romanticized sex for me. This is kind of so beautiful. I have weird feelings about sex for all the reasons that you mentioned. So thank you so much for starting the sex conversation on such a bright note. So let's get back to the touch point. What's the logistic of the event? Just for the people who have never heard about it.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Most people never have. So this would be great if people can learn about it. Touchpoint, there's a theme now starting this year. We've moved to a theme. We don't do the voting. So there's been literally more than 1,000 questions that were submitted. I spent a lot of time going through those questions and realized there was a lot of consistently asked and voted up questions. And so now moving forward, every event will be themed. People will know in advance what the theme is and they can choose to come, just like you came to the town hall about being monogamous and you were probably interested in the conversation around monogamy. And so you were there. You know, our next one is about casual sex. So that'll be on March 6th. So we pick a theme and we do have some featured storytellers who will get up and kick off the night for us. We always have a musical performer who sings a song and, you know, really creates the vibe. Touchpoint is basically done in the dark. It's only candlelight. So as people are sharing, you can barely see people's faces. It brings a sense of anonymity and a sense of intimacy that I think is really profound to the conversation. We serve coconut waters.
On the floor with no shoes.
Yeah, you have to take off your shoes. It's interesting how taking off your shoes is very disarming. It automatically makes you feel like you have to get comfortable and you're going to stay a while, right? And so I think that that's really the thinking behind that.
But it also makes you feel like at home.
Totally.
You don't wear, actually, you Americans wear shoes at home. But most Europeans, we take off our shoes when we enter the apartment.
Absolutely.
So for me, that's a sign, okay, I'm home. I've arrived.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's also a very cool psychological
trick. Absolutely.
I've noticed the way some people with accents, like myself, so they were not all American. So I feel like for them, the fact of taking off shoes was also very comforting.
Yeah.
All right. So you mentioned that you went through the thousands of questions. Who did you spread those questions around? Did you just send them out to your social network?
So what happens is,
Did you read through the books? Like, what was the criteria?
So the old format used to be when you purchase tickets for Touchpoint. So like I said, you came to Touchpoint last week, mm-hmm. you knew it was going to be being monogamous, right? Yeah. So previously, it was just you buy tickets for Touchpoint. Once you buy your ticket, you were sent an email that gave you a link that you could submit a question, a number of questions.
Okay.
Then people submit questions, right? The morning of the event, I would send out the questions that were submitted by the attendees for that event to those attendees and say, these are the questions that were submitted. What do you want to talk about? Mm-hmm. And then they would vote on them. So there was more than 1,000 questions submitted over the 2 years. I have a lot of really interesting data points on the questions that were submitted. The one that I think is probably the most profound and the one that's most important for everyone to know is that almost 25% of the questions that were submitted begin with the phrase, is it okay? And so examples of that are, is it okay if I don't enjoy receiving oral sex? Is it okay if I wear women's clothing under my clothing, I'm not gay? Is it okay if I've always considered myself to be a heterosexual, but I exclusively have same-sex fantasies? Is it okay if I fantasize about other men that aren't my husband? Is it okay if I want to have a threesome? Is it okay that I still talk to my ex-boyfriend on Facebook? Is it okay? And so the questions range from
do I have a permission?
Yeah, and it's all about do I have permission, right? And so
crazy.
And so the thing is that this gives us an interesting window into how we feel. And it's interesting, you referenced yourself you were talking about yourself before and you talked about yourself as a child, and now you're referencing yourself as an adult, right? And I think that there's this misconception that because our bodies age, because we turn 21 or 27 or 45 or 56, that because our bodies are that old, that emotionally or spiritually, we are in fact that old. That oftentimes there's pieces of us and possibly whole chunks of us that are still 5, 8, 11, 4, 14. And I think that as we go through life, we find ourselves in these positions where, like a child, we're asking, is it okay for me to be who I am? And the problem that I've discovered over time is that as children, as chronological children, often we were told, it's not okay. It's not okay. And so we grow up, we get older, we get body hair, right? We go through puberty, we do all the things, we go to school, we get jobs, we pay taxes, but we never really do grow up. And so when I looked at the questions, is it okay? Is it okay? Yeah. I mean, nobody ever submitted a question like, is it okay to have non-consensual sex with a minor, right? Nobody asked anything that I think collectively as a society, we've all currently agreed that's not okay. Everybody's just looking for permission to be themselves. And so I think that the significance of Touchpoint, the significance of the space, and I think the reason why I encourage everybody to take their feather when they leave is to remember that, like, what the best thing to do is to create a safe space for other people. And it doesn't have to be a room with candles, right? It's just a space where you sit at a table with a friend and have a coffee. It's a phone conversation with your mother. It's whatever, it's like, how do we create that safe space where people feel they have the permission to be who they are?
So your answer to all those questions would be yes.
Yeah.
And unless it's a morally unaccepted action, you don't see any limitations. You don't see that there should be any limitations on expressing yourself.
So that's a bold question, and that's not what I said. So so what I did say is that the questions that were submitted to Touchpoint as of now have not been have not violated what I would consider to be our collective moral or ethical code. Meaning, like, nobody said, am I allowed to, like, have sex with a woman who's clearly passed out and can't give me consent, right? So no. I mean, I wouldn't say that people are just free to say and do whatever they want. I think that so far the questions that have been submitted, and you just sat in the room, you know, I mean, it's an amazing, you know, you reference their accents. It's an unbelievably diverse crowd. So you get people from all walks of life, right? Whether it's from, you know, sexual orientation to gender identity to sexual, you know, whatever your relationship framework, you know, you're attracted to, you know, we get all the different kinds of people. But the one thing that's really consistent is that the people that seem to come to Touchpoint and are really attracted to the idea are really respectful of other people's beliefs and values. And so, yeah, we get a lot of diversity. So,
yeah, you have some rules there at Touchpoint to kind of encourage this safe space for others to express their opinions, to share their experiences. Could you list those rules?
Sure. So the rules of Touchpoint are the same four rules as really good sex. So the first rule of Touchpoint is that you have to let your freak flag fly.
Guys, get a pen and write us down.
You have to let your freak flag fly. And the essence of this rule is just that we really want you to be your authentic self. And that doesn't mean that we encourage anyone to share. You know, and if someone wants to share, they can. Most people come to listen. Many do come to share. But let your freak flag fly. Like, be yourself. Just let it all just hit your brain, your mind, and let it just marinate, right? The second rule of Touchpoint is you can't make it all about you. So we do open the floor after we have our featured storytellers. And, you know, I moderate a conversation amongst 100 people and people raise their hands. And so I call on somebody and they now have the opportunity to speak. And so because there's a lot of people in the room and we have a limited amount of time, we just encourage people to, like, share what you need to say and wrap it up. You can't go on and on, or else I politely ask you to, like, get to the point. The third rule of Touchpoint is you have to let people finish. So there is no cross dialogue at Touchpoint. There's no, like, with 100 people in a room, you can't have people shouting over one another. So nobody can interrupt anybody. Like, if somebody's speaking, there's one person speaking at a time and that's it, right? And the fourth rule of Touchpoint is that we never kiss and tell. So it's very important that, you know, when people share at Touchpoint, that, you know, if Michelle shares something, that, you know, you and I don't leave and say, you'll never believe what Michelle said, right? Now, we have introduced microphones in Touchpoint where we recorded some of our speakers. And I believe that Touchpoint's going to be moving towards, like, a podcast moving forward where, you know, there's only 100 people in the room, but I think there's hundreds of millions of people that would like to experience what's happening in that room. And so I think that bringing it to a podcast is going to be really exciting. But even then, there's not going to be any attribution to the voices. So it's not like anybody ever identifies themselves or says their name, you know, or gives any revealing information about themselves.
Unless you have a really revealing accent, like I do. But it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Four rules. So you mentioned that you are the student of the people who come to Touchpoint, mm-hmm. which is beautiful because you're also a creator of Touchpoint. What are some of the most profound lessons outside of that BDSM story that you have learned in the last 2 years from the stories that you've heard?
I think that the most important lesson I've learned from my experience with Touchpoint is that in order for a relationship of any type to thrive, the people in that relationship need to feel a sense of space and safety. So this has nothing to do with romantic love. This could be the relationship between a parent and a child. This could be the relationship between a student and a teacher. This could be the relationship between a boss and an employee. But when we feel a sense of space and safety, we are empowered to do the things we need to do. And when we don't, we don't. And so now it's important to define what these words mean.
Right.
So space is the freedom to explore myself and the world. It's the freedom to explore what's possible. Safety is to know that, like, I am not in fear of judgment or abandonment, right? that I can express myself without the fear of judgment or abandonment. So what's really key here is that, you know, you came to a town hall, we were talking about monogamy. There are a lot of couples that are monogamous because they're afraid to say, oh, I think I'm attracted to somebody else. And so they're really choosing from fear because they're afraid that the partner will abandon or reject or judge, right? There's a lot of, you know, and that's one issue, right? But there's tons and tons of issues where if we don't cultivate space and safety in a really intentional way, relationships get really hard. And so I think that, you know, it's very important to me that the things that Touchpoint puts out into the world are universal enough and are inclusive enough so that everybody feels like in some sense they're applicable to their own lives. And I think space and safety is the thing that it doesn't matter how you identify. It doesn't matter what your, you know, your gender, your orientation, what relationship format you like, you know, what your socioeconomic status is. When you feel a sense of space and safety in your relationship, you are thriving. And when you don't, you feel imprisoned. And so that's probably above all the things. I mean, I've talked about all the things, but that to me is the most important and is the deal breaker in almost every relationship that I see that is where there's a tremendous amount of suffering. The suffering in some sense is rooted in a lack of space or a lack of safety.
A lot of words that start with an S in your statement. Suffering because of the lack of safety and space.
Yeah.
Guys, this is Radio Free Brooklyn and you're listening to What Is Love show, where we're discussing with Jared, his creation, Touchpoint. Well, his creation, but also his main teacher. If you have a question, actually, or if you'd like to share your story about being safe or unsafe in the relationship, you can call to the show. Yeah, it's a live show. And the calling number, let me try not to forget it. I think it's 718-928-9732. Yes, I had to close my eyes to remember the number. But one more time, it is 718-928-9732. This is Radio Free Brooklyn, and we're waiting for your calls. If you have any questions for Jared personally, or if you'd like to share your own story, no judgment. Radio Free Brooklyn is a safe place for you guys. So, yeah. Call us in. So, Jared, let's get back to the Touchpoint. Let's touch base on Touchpoint. where do you see it going in the next 2 years, 5 years? And also, what is the ultimate goal? Like, what are you trying to do with Touchpoint on a larger perspective?
So, I think that my explorations with Touchpoint have revealed two areas where we could use a lot of support as a community. The first area is conversation, and the second area is education. So the way we're tackling conversation today is we have a town hall in New York City that people come to once a month. That's going to grow into a podcast that it won't be limited to an experience of 100 people. I think it could be an experience that anybody can access. In the vertical of conversation, we're also working on a deck of cards. It's 69 cards. Every card has a different theme. The themes have all come from this database of questions that have emerged.
Yeah.
So the themes are, and the touch points are all based on all these town halls are based on them. So being monogamous is a card. Casual sex is a card. Getting pregnant is a card. Exploring your gender identity is a card. You pull a card and there's a series of questions on every card. And there's like 2 to 4 questions. And so each card in and of itself is a conversation. And so you can sit with a partner. You can sit with friends. You can sit with your parents. I did actually.
Wow.
I played it with my dad. It was the first conversation I've had about sexuality with my father in my whole life. It was unbelievable.
What theme was on your card?
The one that we talked about? Well, the first one we pulled was anal sex. He didn't want to talk about that. So then we pulled orgasm. And he had some very insightful things to share. I actually wrote a Medium piece about this. Yeah. So my father said, what was it? So he pulled orgasm. And I said, well, what comes up for you? And he said, well, I think it's more about the manipulating than the penetrating. And I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe my father just said that. And so then we were sitting there talking some more. I was like, Dad, what do you mean? And he's like, well, Jared, this is how you make the volcano. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. So the conversation with Dad around how to,
Did you feel closer to him?
I did. It was an amazing experience. And it was just like, I think that on that note, I think that the cards, so, you know, in the van, you were talking about the growth of Touchpoint, talking about the cards and talking about conversation. I think that talking about sex tends to be a very precautionary measure, right? We're told like you should talk about sex because a lot of terrible shit can happen if you don't talk about sex, right? Like you can get pregnant, you can get an STI, you get emotionally and get destroyed. The whole reason we talk about sex is because like terrible shit's gonna happen to you if you don't. Okay. So I think that the nature of the cards and Touchpoint in and of itself is there to say like, no, actually, if you talk about sex, it's not just to prevent the bad stuff. It's actually to cultivate the amazing stuff. Yeah. It's supposed to cultivate the emotional and spiritual connection you need to actually take this exploration to a physical plane that is far more, you know, amazing than what you could experience without it. And so I think that, you know, the nature of the cards is going to be very, very exciting. So the cards will come out this year. And then once we release the cards, we will start popping up town halls in cities all over the world. So there'll be, wow, you know, Touchpoint LA, Touchpoint Miami, Touchpoint San Francisco, Touchpoint, you know, Paris, Touchpoint all over the place.
Touchpoint is taking the world.
And the beauty of that event will be there will be speakers, but then everybody will be able to use the card from that night, and then people can just speak in little groups. It won't be moderated like in New York. It'll be a little bit more intimate, so it won't be a town hall in that respect. But that's the next step.
Wow, that's a profound mission. Wow.
Yeah.
That's really so inspiring. Yeah. Do you have people who help you with it, or
I have? So we do.
You know, there's and just period.
Yeah. So I do have. The event itself, we have lots of volunteers who step up and, you know, they help, you know, on the day of the event specifically execute everything. I've been working pretty tirelessly on the cards all year. So writing the questions, going through all the data, spending all the time, you know. I do a lot of the, if not everything, for the management of like our website and all the things. There are people who are coming on board now to take over like our Instagram. We're working on this podcast. People are going to be taking that over. But again, they're just people that have emerged through the community or inspired by the mission and want to be a part of it. So,
yeah, I cannot imagine a person that would want to be a part of this community. It sounds so fascinating to me.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, my friend, who invited me to the Touchpoint. Actually, speaking of which, your strategy to kind of get new people on board is quite interesting. So you don't really spread the word a lot in social media, but you prefer friends to invite their friends and acquaintances. Could you speak a bit about that?
Sure. At the end of every touch point, I encourage, you know, anybody who has had a meaningful experience to share Touchpoint on Facebook Messenger, not their Facebook wall. And so what that means is that it's not, look, we can only fit about 100 people in the room. So this isn't a thing where we're looking to sell 1,000 tickets, right? And like, you know what I mean? It's not about the quantity of humans that are in the room. It's like the community itself is very self-selecting in the sense that like when you look around and you see that diversity in the room, and it's wild. It's what, and people ask me all the time, they're like, how are you building such a diverse community? And I'm like, I create an Eventbrite page. Like, I don't know. Like, I think that the Touchpoint is... my ethos is to be open and empathetic and loving. And I think that scales into the brand and to the experience, and people feel that. And so I tell people, like, this is not about telling everybody you know. It is about going to Facebook Messenger or iMessage or wherever you communicate and inviting the two or three people that you think really should be in the room because they have something really meaningful to say, or they like you feel like they should be in there because there's some meaningful stuff they need to hear. And I think that it's grown like very, very intimately and very beautifully. Whereas the people who do come in, it's like you were shepherded in by your friend, yeah. right? And everybody has that experience. You know, everybody has that, like, my friend brought me in. My friend brought me here, you know? And that's a beautiful thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I hope it's not going to, you know, expand too much, you know, in a sense that the format will change drastically. Like, I can imagine this event just becoming really popular and, like you said, 1,000 people want to come in, and then it would be a completely different dynamic and completely different experience.
Totally.
It's almost like Burning Man, you know, started with, what was that, like 1,000 people, now it's 80,000, and it's totally different.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Do you foresee the changes that might make you reconsider the format?
Sure. Well, the biggest, I would say the format went through probably its biggest change in 2 years by eliminating the people submitting questions, giving them a topic in advance, pulling in speakers, introducing microphones. You know, next month, you know, I still have to poll the community because it's really important that we get the feedback from the people who have like really are the heart and soul. Like I said, they're my greatest teachers, and I need to ask them if they're okay with us turning this town hall into a podcast in and of itself. That would be probably the biggest fundamental change that we've ever had, where we're really turning it inside out and allowing people to listen in on what happens at the Touchpoint Town Hall in New York City. So, and that would be a big change. To the experience, because now there's mics floating around and everybody who raises their hand gets a microphone. And so it's a big experiential change. I don't know if it's going to happen, but that would most likely be the biggest change we make. And then beyond that, I think that we will end up having these other experiences that I won't be moderating all over the world, in which you come, you listen to the speakers. It's like, you know, a storytelling experience, like the first half of what you experience, but then you'll have the card that has the questions on it. And then you'll just turn and sit with a few people that are sitting around you, and you'll have a conversation. And if you want, you can switch groups if you want or whatever, but it's less of a curated thing. And it's more intimate with just a few people talking to each other. And I think that that's probably how the event will scale. Yeah. And to that end, it's like, doesn't really matter how many people are there, you know, like it could be 100, it could be 500. I mean, it's like, it could
but then
be
still have your little small type group
right.
within a,
either way, you have gathering. To take off your shoes
and you have, yeah, yeah, please keep that true.
Yeah, of course. That's one of course. Yeah.
You should actually sit as, oh my God, that's also a rule of a good sex. Take off your shoes. Unless you
not
want
always
to.
Though. You know, I gotta tell you, not always. It's funny. I gotta tell you, you know, there was one where we were talking about, I don't remember what we were talking about, but somebody shared something around, you know, a woman said something like, nobody wants to watch their partner have sex with another person. And then this other woman was like, I love watching my partner have sex with another person. And I was just like, this is why I created this space. Because we do, you know, it's like whether it's keeping our shoes on or watching somebody else have sex with our partner or whatever, there's just people have, there's a broad spectrum of experiences that people want and have had. And
I so. Just realized I want to try to have sex with shoes on.
Oh, perfect. Thank God.
Cowboy boots.
There you go. I'm glad that this conversation could have facilitated that realization.
Awesome. So, Jared, actually, I'm glad that you mentioned the next theme will be casual sex. Let's talk about casual sex for a
sure.
bit now. There's like, yeah, sure, why not? How do I start? So there are a lot of people, single people in New York, right? How do you, like, what's your personal take on casual sex? What is casual sex to you? What do you feel about one night stand? Is it a thing? How basically to carry on the singleness in New York when you don't have a partner, but you want to also feel healthy, because sex is healthy.
Mm-hmm. That was a lot of questions. And I think that, you know, typically when we're talking about these things, I think the most important thing to do at the beginning is to define what it is we're talking about.
Yeah.
And what's funny at that stage is that you realize that everybody's talking about a different thing.
Right, right, exactly. So remember, at the monogamy
totally.
Night, there were two completely different definitions. The one couple defined monogamy as a not having sex with anybody outside, mm-hmm. not having sex outside of their partnership, mm-hmm. whereas to no names on the show, to another speaker, it was only about the platonic relationship,
mm-hmm.
and sex sex had nothing to do with being monogamous or not. So yeah, mm-hmm. that's a great
right.
point.
So I don't know.
Let's define casual sex.
So you're asking me about casual sex. Tell me what it is we're talking about.
Okay, casual sex is having sex without relationship with that person.
So that's really interesting, right? Because that in and of itself is actually a cultural thing, right? So like, you know, when I've traveled and I've met people around the world, like, you know, I've met women and men in other cultures that mm-hmm. would say, like, if I've gone out on a date or two with you, like, we're in a thing. Like, we're, right? Like, we're definitely in a thing. Like, we didn't have to codify it or have a meaningful conversation. Like, if I've gone on three dates with you, like, we're definitely doing a dance here, right?
Okay.
And that's not typically how it is in the United States,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So even what you're saying in terms of, like, you know, we're having sex, but we're not in a relationship is, like, that's still, like, it's almost like a pretty American perspective,
yeah.
right? And there are cultures and people who are raised in other cultures who feel totally differently. So,
let's
do you know what I mean? So it's really hard. Also, we're limiting casual sex to singledom. So I know I've had plenty of couples that have come to Touchpoint and they love having casual sex with other people. It's one of their favorite things to do. And some of them do it with other people separately. And some of them only do it with like they have threesomes. But it's super casual. They'll go on a vacation. They'll meet a random man or woman and invite them over. Right. And they have casual sex.
Okay.
So this idea that casual sex has something to do with being single exclusively is just, it's not true. And then the idea that like, it means that I'm not in a relationship, you know, that I'm having sex with a person that I'm not in a relationship with is also not true, because you could be having sex with somebody who you have a profound emotional investment in, but you are not in a committed relationship with, right? So, wow, this gets so complicated. Oh my God, I don't know what we're talking about anymore.
Right. You go out.
You see? But this is so important, right? So and this is why this is so important for all of us to discuss. Because we're so certain of what these things mean.
I'm actually thinking right now what casual sex is.
Right. Well, but it is whatever it is to you. And this is the other thing that's super important that I've heard plenty of times is that, you know how often I find out that people are having sex with a person and they think they're in the midst of a relationship that they're cultivating and the other person is just having casual sex with them. Right? You may think you're having casual sex with somebody, but they don't think they're having casual sex with you. And so what does that mean? What does that look like? So I think that these are the things that it really, yeah. And this is why it requires conversation. So to bring it back to the top of the hour of like, we do these things. Why do we have to talk about them? Well, because man, we think about these things so differently. Each and every person brings their own thing to each of these words.
Okay, so let me then really narrow down my question.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm coming from the female perspective. I've discussed this with my girlfriends who are single and their late 20s or early 30s. So single woman, single person, mm-hmm. goes out to a bar, to a club, to a gallery, whatever, meets a person that she is or he is attracted to, and they go and have sex. So that's casual sex.
Okay.
There's no history before. There's no history after.
Mm-hmm.
What's your take on that?
I think I only have one question. I really only
You're being a Socrates right now.
Hold on. I'm
answering to my question.
But this is my question. It's my question is actually for the two people. It's not for you.
Okay.
How do you feel about yourself? That's really it. So when you ask me what I think of casual sex, I think that when two people do a thing, when they're done, they can ask themselves, how do I feel about myself? If they feel great, if a woman or a man engages in some sort of play with a person that they don't know well, they just met, or that whatever it is, if they feel empowered, if they feel really strongly about themselves, about their decisions, if they feel like it was a meaningful experience for themselves in some sense, then great. Right?
From my experience, it's never
okay,
a meaningful experience.
So, but that's the thing. I think that when we do things,
that's a good guidance.
Coming back to one question, you know, it's like when you ask me, how do I feel about casual sex? Have I had casual sex in my life? Yes. There have been moments where afterwards, I don't feel so good about myself. There have been moments where I I feel great about myself, right? And so I think that it's not this like catch-all general, like, oh, casual sex makes us feel blank. I think everything is super nuanced. I think everything is super circumstantial. And like all we can do, the best we can do is at the end say, how do I feel about myself? And whatever that answer is, that's your guide.
I'm totally on you, with you on this, honestly, and that's kind of what I told my friend that I had this discussion with, from my experience with in conversations with other, primarily with women, they never feel great. Oh wait, hold on, we got a call. Hello, you're on Hi. Radio Free Brooklyn, yes.
Hi, my name is Olya.
Oh, hello, Olya.
I do have a question.
Sure.
Well, first of all, I am a total sucker for Touchpoint. I've been going there for quite some time.
That's quite a compliment.
And, yeah. to Jared, yes. So my question is, did you ever have to deal with negativity towards Touchpoint from people who never heard of it? And if you had, how did you deal with that?
I guess I'd need you to be a little bit more specific. Well, first of all, also, uh-huh. Thank you so much. I'm so happy that you're calling, and I'm so happy that you've been to Touchpoint so many times. And that's amazing to hear. So I'm grateful that you're here and that you're asking the question. I just want to understand the question a little bit more. When you say negativity, what do you mean?
Okay, well, let's say I'll give you more information. I have a lot of people in my life that I think, and maybe it's a little entitled, but I think that they could benefit from coming to Touchpoint. And obviously, I cannot bring them all, not just because it's logistics or schedule, or because some people are not open, and some people are not even open, but they, when I talk about it a little bit, they kind of become a little negative. And like my question is a little practical. Do you have advice maybe of how to deal with that, how to maybe
direct that negativity into people to Touchpoint that are hesitant about Touchpoint? Let's use the word hesitant, probably. Not trying to attract, but how to show them the value of Touchpoint.
Sure. I think that in general, it's important that, people find their own way and that we don't project mm-hmm. the things that work for us onto anybody else. And if mm-hmm. somebody is in a place in their life where they feel like going to Touchpoint or going to a football game or going to see a band at perform or whatever it is, whatever the thing is, mm-hmm. There's resistance of all kinds to all the things. And we just have to allow people the space to just choose for themselves, So I think the answer is if somebody doesn't feel like Touchpoint is for them, then they're probably right now. And, we're never one thing forever. And maybe at some point they'll think differently. And either way, I think that it's important to know that there's a limited number of messages in the world, but there's an unlimited number of messengers. And what I mean by that is that, what we're learning at Touchpoint are very similar things that you'll find in, texts that are written by great meditation gurus and things you'll learn through Kundalini yoga and things you'll learn through all sorts of different, modalities and mediums. And I think that, if your friends are resistant, then that's fine. I do think that the most significant thing you can do to promote Touchpoint is to take the things that you learn, the things that you may realize, and integrate them and embody them. Absolutely. And that's really the best you can do. And thank God you attend. And I'm so grateful that you've called. And I hope that answer is sufficient.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I actually do get a lot of, I wouldn't say compliments, but from people that they're saying to me that, you've changed, and I said that's
so what was the most profound change, Ola? What was the most profound change in you because of Touchpoint?
I think it's a lot of things. I think Jared was right by saying that it was just time for me, and it was a great timing because I was seeking for something like that, and the answer was kind of like, you know, came through Google with, you know, with your article, I read your article, and I was like, oh, I have to go. Touchpoint sounds amazing. I was super scared, and I was sitting there in that chair, and I was super shy, but I've started coming every month, and I had this feeling of liberation in a way, and also understanding that, oh my God, there are so many people that, like you said, is that okay? Is that okay? Like trying to give yourself the permission.
Figure out all these questions for themselves. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, trying to find for permission from other people, not understanding that you are actually the person who has to, who have to,
has the
you know,
power to also.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
so
no,
I,
I'm
that,
so sorry. I have to, Yeah, I have to stop you right there.
Sorry. Thanks so much.
1 minute, but thank you so much for the call. Yeah.
Thank you, Olya.
Bye bye.
Keep
you.
Coming.
I will. Bye.
Well, we really have 1 minute left, Jared. So, what is love?
What is, that's your question?
Yes. And if you have any relationship advice to our audience, feel free to give it.
Okay. What is love? Love is understanding. That would be what is love. And my relationship advice is, if you're in New York, go to lovetouchpoint.com and get tickets to our next event, which is March 6th. Follow us on Instagram at Love Touchpoint and look out for our podcast. And just know that Touchpoint was created because we believe that when it comes to matters of the heart, there are no questions and answers, only questions and ideas. And at Touchpoint, all ideas are welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Guys, stay with Radio Free Brooklyn. The Another Life show is coming, and have a blessed Sunday afternoon.
Just see.